You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
Yep.
Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York.
Yep.
The ESPN New York app.
Yep.
Or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.
Got the number one pick in the NHL draft, but the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's
Lars Eller! Every trash, EMT for short. Wonder if we best once you peep the score. Up at the crack of dawn, top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise to shine with 98.7. This is drop time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Got Dave and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
Happy Tuesday! The 26th day of March, 2024. It is DNR, yet again, Dan and Rick. 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. On a CMT Tuesday, among other things, we've got our pals Ray, we've got RJ. Good morning, Richard. How the hell are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Daniel. How are you doing today?
Oh, you look fantastic. You sound fantastic. If I could be as half as fantastic as you today, I think we'll have some fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's very nice of you to say on this Tuesday morning.
Well, why wouldn't I say that? What, do you think I'm BSing you? You think I'm talking out of my you-know-what? I wouldn't do that to you.
Whatever it is, I like it. Keep it up.
You like it. I like it.
Kinda
you like that
it.
Start to the show. That's good. How was your Monday? What did you consume? Because, you know, it's funny. We got off the air, I don't know, what, 20 hours ago, and there have a lot of things that have transpired since then. So what have you been up to?
There have been a lot of things that transpired. I mean, Nick's number one on the agenda. And, you know, it feels good. Are you clapping right now?
I'm clapping for the Knicks, yeah.
Yeah, it feels good to root for a team and love a team that did what we talked about yesterday. Don't mess around.
Mm-mm.
Let's not have a repeat of what we saw last time we played the Pistons. Get out early, take care of business, and that's exactly what they did. So I indulged myself in some of that, and I also sprinkled in some Caitlin Clark. Watched a little Iowa.
And what was the final there? I missed that out because we were doing the Knick game last night.
It was Iowa won. But it was a lot more difficult than I think they thought it probably was going to be. Well, I'll give West Virginia tons of credit. They defended hard. A little bit of a struggle bus for Iowa, but they found a way to get the job done.
So they're now in the Sweet 16, right?
Yes, they are.
So you got the men's tournament, the women's tournament. Everybody's in the Sweet 16. And so onward and upward here for the NCAAs.
Yes, sir.
You know, there's also a common theme that's kind of unfolding. And Ray can back me up on this one. Remember the last time the Knicks played the Pistons? At MSG, remember you had all that Fugazi stuff with some of the whistles at the end of the game, and you had Monty Williams throw a tirade after the game that Detroit got hosed by the officials, and you know they should have had a better fade, and maybe he had a little bit of a gripe. Okay,
yeah.
Last night though, when his team didn't even show up, or at least the guys that they had in uniform didn't even show up, he's going to go up there and then start bellyaching and crying over the fact that Dante DiVincenzo set a franchise record for most 3-pointers in a game because his team stinks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, Monty's got to check himself a little bit, don't you think? Because not for nothing, dude. Like, if you want to prevent that stuff from happening, how about, oh, I don't know, maybe play better defense as a team?
Well, that's pretty much what Josh Hart said. You don't want to be part of the story. Defend better. We're going to give the ball. I mean, it's what you do in basketball. This guy gets hot. You find him. That's what they did with Dante. 11 threes, career high 40 points. I got to tell you, too, though, man. Like, he is... What he's been able to do now with this expanded role, and it's funny because some of these games that, you know, the Knicks end up losing, I mean, there's some extra pressure on him now without OG and without Julius Randle to be that kind of that second guy. And when he struggles, I mean, it's hard for the Knicks just because they don't have a lot of offense around Jalen Brunson or guys you can rely on, and Dante's become that guy. So when he has a night like he had last night and the kind of season that he's having for the Knicks right now, Josh Hart had another triple-double. Dude, I mean, this is one of those teams, man. It's hard not to love this team if you're a Knicks fan and be fully invested, fully in with what this team does on a nightly basis.
I agree with you. And I even said last night during the postgame show that what's cool about it, with DiVincenzo now taking on more of the brunt when it comes to scoring, you know, Josh Hart, even though Josh Hart, you're not relying on him so much for offense, but all the other things that he does for this team. What's cool about it is that while these guys are still on the shelf, Randall and OG, it's taken some of the scoring onus off of Jalen Brunson. And you feel like maybe he doesn't have to do as much because, look, you're already not whole as it is. You got 11 games left in the regular season. You want to make sure you get to the playoffs as healthy as possible. And the guys that you still have upright, make sure they're as fresh as possible. So if Brunson even, if you could preserve him even more for him not having to do as much, I think that could help this team in the real season. So this is unbelievable. And, you know, I keep thinking back to DiVincenzo. He was a guy that was signed. Look, second straight offseason. Let's tell it like it is when it comes to Leon Rose. The second straight offseason, his so-called big acquisition, 2 summers ago was Jalen Brunson. Last summer, it was Dante DiVincenzo. He's hit on both of them, right? I mean, he has hit on both of these guys. And DiVincenzo was supposed to be somebody who was coming off of the bench, helped space the floor, hit the occasional three. We weren't really expecting a heck of a lot. Instead, you're talking about somebody that has stepped into the starting lineup, and not that you're expecting 30 points a game from him, but now he is somebody that you expect on a nightly basis to go out there and contribute and do all these things. So give Leon Rose some flowers, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we've done that a lot on the show. Just, I mean, outside of his first foray with the Fourniers and the Kemba Walkers, where it didn't feel like it just that the moves didn't work, didn't fit, right? Like, it didn't feel like Tibbs and Leon were necessarily on the same page, right? Like, that just didn't work out. For him now to go with, I mean, Jalen, trading for Josh Hart, Hartenstein, DiVincenzo, OG, the second he gets, you know, the second you put him in the starting five, it instantly works. Like, everything that Leon Rose has done has worked, and it's worked seamlessly. And it feels like, I mean, he is giving this coaching staff the, you know, the players that they need, the exact kind of players that they need that fit this system. They all buy into it. They all like each other, which I think is, I mean, you've been around enough locker rooms. When you have this kind of legitimate chemistry, like, it's one thing to have close-knit teams. This is different.
Right.
Like what Josh Hart, Brunson, Dante have, like, this is, I say this to Dave all the time, as cool as it was playing in the NHL, and it was the coolest, you know, it was the coolest experience of my life, the closest locker rooms that I ever had were in college. My first year of college, my only year of college. And then there was a team in the AHL with Bridgeport that we had that was like this. When you love your teammates the way that those guys love each other, it translates on the ice, on the floor, on the field at a different level, man. Like, you play, well, for whatever reason it is, when you truly care about your teammates the way those guys care about each other and can hold each other accountable, like, you see how they mess around. I mean, it's, you can't put a price tag on what that means, and they have it. Those guys love each other. Those guys are the ones that set the tone. The other thing you love about this team too is, I mean, the face of the team now, right? Your best player, a guy who should get MVP votes, Jalen Brunson, like, he is the perfect conduit from Tibbs to this team. Like, all the stuff that Tibbs teaches, like, Jalen, that's who he is. That's what he buys into. So, I mean, it's, you have the perfect coach to best player, which trickles down to the rest of the team, and now you're seeing the result of it. And I got to tell you, man, the other positive through this whole thing, if it ends up being a positive, like, my fingers crossed, because, you know, it almost feels like what would have been an amazing season kind of got, you know, piece by piece ripped away a little bit. You know, as we're sitting there talking, they go through this run in January where they're 14-2. We're like, oh my God, we could get the 2 seed.
Right.
And then players just one by one start going down. Is, you know, when Mitch comes back, when OG comes back, and I do think that Julius is going to come back, like, why else wouldn't you have got the surgery unless you're going to do whatever you can to try to come back? And even if you, like, let's just see how long it lasts when I do come back, and then we can get surgery if it doesn't work. Like, the fact that you got no wear and tear in their legs right now. Right, so these other guys are taking the brunt of this, right? Because they got to get, you know, got to win basketball games. So Josh is playing a lot. Even Deucey's playing a ton now. The physicality that, you know, Jalen takes on a nightly basis. But you got a fresh Julius Randle coming back, fresh Mitch, you know, fresh OG coming back and trying to make this run through the playoffs. I mean, it could end up being a positive. But again, you got to get those guys back first.
Well, and that's the thing. And Tibbs said before the game that right now, out of the three guys, it seems like Mitch is the one who is the closest to return, which is a little concerning because a week ago, OG was playing.
Right.
Right. I mean, OG started this West Coast trip. He played the first couple of games. And now all of a sudden, you're telling me Mitchell Robinson is going to be the first guy to return. And, you know, OG did some light shooting at the shoot around. That's great. But now does that mean he's taken a wrong turn and we're not going to see him maybe for the rest of the regulars? I mean, you have to almost think worst case scenario because, as we talked about yesterday, it's an injury prone player. Right. And the only way this whole thing is going to fire like you want it to as a Knick fan is if these guys are healthy. You know, if you don't get this whole group back, I don't see how you can make any sort of legitimate argument that this team could take down the Boston Celtics.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, this is the beauty of the playoffs. You know, Boston's best versus our best. If we don't have OG and Julius Randle or we don't have one of those guys, I'm hard-pressed to think best on best that we beat Boston four times. But with the amount of pressure on Boston, some of their late-game execution stuff, I mean, maybe you have a chance if you're fully healthy. I actually think you do have a pretty decent chance if you're fully healthy and Julius Randle is, you know, what we see from Julius Randle when he's healthy in the regular season. If we get that version of Julius Randle, the one thing I'll say about OG, because I'm with you, I'm stunned that Mitchell Robinson's going to be the first one back. Like, I didn't even think he was, I mean, we were trying to get an exemption. Like, right. No one even thought he was coming back, and now he might be the first one back. I think with the OG thing, I think as you come back post-surgery and he ends up, you know, going in for that steal, like, it's so hard, right? You try to do all the, you know, he's been cleared for contact. Well, practice contact is different than game contact, right? Like, you're not overexerting yourself. Like, I'm not going to go for the steal that, you know, he gets himself hurt on against DeAndre Ayton in practice. Like, why would I do that? It makes no sense to him in practice, but you get into a game and you get competitive. You make a move that you normally would. Now, all of a sudden, we get some inflammation in his elbow. I think they saw how easily, when he jumped back, like how seamless it was again when he jumped back in. And they're like, why would we mess with it? Like, this is the last thing we want, is for him to start tweaking it every game or every two games, and we lose him for two games. Let's make sure this thing calms down. He's fine. Like, once we get him back, let's make sure we keep him back so we don't have to rush him. And then the Julius thing is, I'm sure they probably have something at this point. You would think that they have a date circled where this is the amount of games we got to get him back to have him at his best once the postseason starts. We'll see if this can actually work as we head into the postseason.
It's funny you mentioned Boston, too, because last night, I mean, they're going to have these, like, every team is going to have these games every so often, and maybe, you know, they get it out of their system before the playoffs start. Did you see what happened to the Celtics last night? They had a 30-point lead, 30-0, in Atlanta against the Hawks, and they lost.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look, it's the dog days of the NBA regular season. I get it. And that's the one of the things that you had to guard against last night for the Knicks. And even as you could be the biggest Knicks fan there was probably at least that little bit of you that probably dreaded going up against the Pistons team that was essentially G Leaguers out there, that you just hoped that they wouldn't go through the motions and mail one in and maybe have to sweat it out. And they didn't. That game was over in the first quarter last night. It was over.
Yeah, well, he made six threes. I mean, you end up, he held them to 17 points. They had no one. I mean, that's another game where they were playing without Cunningham. Like, they had a bunch of guys out, and there was no reason to make that a close game. You didn't have to. Like, it could be a night where you go out, have some, you know, make sure you take care of your business early, have some fun later.
But that's what good teams do, right? I mean, that's what good teams do. Put teams away that you should. Don't give them even an ounce of belief that they can maybe pull an upset. You know, Jaden Ivey and, you know, Buddy Boeheim and Evan Fournier, you know, that's a team you should destroy. Which, by the way, and look, Tibbs has done a great job. I do have one bone to pick with Tibbs, though, if you'll allow me to.
Keeps his guys in too long?
Well, I mean, that's you know, what day doesn't end in why, right?
Okay.
But late in the game, I think it was like late third quarter, Knicks are up by 20-something. What is he doing challenging calls? I mean, what are we doing? Slowing the game down for 10 minutes at a time.
Man.
Yeah, but come on. Ray, you with me? Ray, you with me on that one? You were in the building, too.
What do you want me to say? That he's wrong for challenging the call? This again, like you said, this is Tom Thibodeau. He's not going to not challenge it.
No.
Same way that he's not going to have key players up by 20-something points late in the game.
Didn't Monty do one as well? I thought he challenged. Right, yes. So both of them, like, the game was over.
Tibbs,
like,
used
what are
both
we
of his.
Doing?
Yep.
This is who he is, man. He does not take a play off. He's true to his word, man. That's how he coaches, too. Do not take a play off. He will not let the score of a game dictate how he coaches.
Ray sent a great...
It's not even about the score of the game. It's that he views that a game is never really over until you get to a certain point. So even if he's up like 25 with like 5 minutes left, he's experienced games that can turn on a dime, and he's not willing to take that chance.
Ray, you sent a great little text last night with the two screenshots, one of like David Fizdale from back in the day. And it had the score bug, and the Knicks were down by like 30, and Fizz is like giggling or laughing or smiling or whatever. And then on the bottom, it was Tibbs from last night. Knicks are up, you know, 25, and he's got a scowl on his face.
If looks could kill.
That's how it is.
You got to love him, though, man.
But again, I'm grateful for that because I remember what it was like when that Fizdale stuff was going on.
Oh, we remember quite well.
Every Knicks fan should be grateful. Even the Knicks fans that trash Tibbs every chance they get. No, this is a good thing. This is a good thing.
Shout out Lance Thomas. Hey, from superchargers, exhaust kits, and more, eBay Motors has over 122 million parts to keep your ride or die alive. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere, Dave.
I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Last day of the league meetings taking place today down in Florida. The NFC coaches are going to hold court in the old breakfast room. So you'll hear from Brian Daboll coming up a little over an hour. So we'll turn that sound around for you like we did yesterday with Robert Saleh. But we also heard from John Mara, from Joe Shane, the other powers that be with the Giants. And we'll get to what they had to say coming up in just a bit. But interesting comments, Richard, from the owner of the New York Jets about Zach Wilson. Now, everybody expects that Zach Wilson's going to be playing someplace else next year. Joe Douglas essentially said that at his end-of-season press conference, that, you know, a fresh start is probably beneficial to both sides. And obviously, the quarterback market, the way it's unfolded, it seems like Zach Wilson, if it's a game of musical chairs, that the music has stopped and he's still standing without a seat, that there's really no place for him right now, and the Jets have not been able to work out a deal for him. So here was the Jet owner talking about, indeed, that is the plan.
You know, if we don't trade him, we're going to keep him. So it's possible that he could do it here. It's probably better, from his standpoint, it's probably better if he changes faces and gets to a new place and he can wipe the slate clean.
Now, Jets Twitter lost their collective you-know-what yesterday when that comment started to make the rounds, that if we don't trade him, we're going to keep him. I'll ask you this question, even though you don't have a helicopter. What are the percent chance that you give that Zach Wilson is on this roster when training camp opens?
I'm hoping 0%.
Not hoping. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you got to tell me. I mean, answer me this question before I answer your question. Mm-hmm. I mean, was this just like a last-ditch effort from Woody?
Last-ditch effort of what?
To get someone to actually try to trade for him so they don't have to release him for nothing?
No,
that's
I don't
what
think
that's what teams are hoping.
But I don't think that's benefiting you if that was indeed the plan, because you're basically then mortgaging whatever type of leverage you have in that situation. Because you're basically this.
Well,
is,
no.
Well, no. He's telling the world. He's like, guys, we want to trade Zach Wilson. We haven't found a trading partner yet. Please, please help us. What team's going to bend over backwards to do the Jets a favor?
No, but you're missing the point here, right? So, I mean, this is something they gave him. I mean, we were talking about this before the show started, right? Like, it wasn't that Joe just said it. I think he actually, I mean, they told Zach he can actively go look to get traded. Like, they were going to trade him. Zach fully expects to be traded to be on a different team. If there's no team out there because of how much money he makes, they don't want to take on that money, think, yeah, we'd like Zach Wilson, but we don't want to trade anything for him. We'll just wait till they inevitably have to release him. So if Woody's saying now, well, we're not going to release him. So if you want him, come get him. Otherwise, he'll be a Jet. That's what I mean. They don't have any leverage. Everyone knows they want to trade him. I'm just saying, for one of those teams that maybe is thinking about, hey, I could work with Zach Wilson. I would like to, once they cut him, we would consider taking him on. If they're not going to cut him, maybe we have to give something up to get him.
You know what might have to happen? Seriously. Just like what we saw with the free agent market, with pitching, for example, with baseball. They might have to take this thing into the spring, into the summer, like mini camps, OTAs. And if a club were to suffer an injury at the quarterback position, that's when they pick up the phone, they call Joe Douglas and say, hey, we need some help. And that's when you get a trade done for Zach Wilson. So if you're asking me, I'll actually put it at least 50-50 that when camp opens in late July, he still might be a New York Jet. I know fans don't want to hear that, but that might be the reality, because they're just not going to release him. That's an $11 million dead cap hit for the Jets. They are not going to absorb that type of money to just send this guy on his merry way. They want to be able to get something for him.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. And I think this is the problem with Zach is he's divisive, right? I mean, there are people that are just Zach truthers that he can't, like, it's not Zach's fault. And then there are other people that are like, okay, it's time to move on from Zach. I think the biggest fear for most Jets fans is that you have a 40-year-old quarterback coming back from an Achilles, right? And you have a backup quarterback that also has not shown the ability to stay healthy. So God forbid Zach ends up being the third quarterback, Aaron goes down, at some point Tyrod goes down, and we're going to see Zach Wilson playing for the Jets again.
That's their worst fears.
Yes.
Because then it's a repeat of last year, essentially.
That's right.
And look, here's the, and you made a good point, like, with Zach. This era of Jets football, when I say this era, like the last 5 years, for example, right? We all know they're getting new uniforms, right? So, like, in this uniform, which they've had for 5 years, Adam Gase used to be the poster boy for it. Like, when you think about, like, who is the face of these last 5 years of the Jets, like, Adam Gase was that guy.
Yep.
Because things went spectacularly wrong. He wasn't a popular hire to begin with, but then they didn't produce in those couple of years he was on the job, so then he became the blame guy. The introductory press conference with all the memes and all those things. But in the last few years, Zach Wilson has kind of taken over that mantle. So, like, now you think of Jets football 2019 to 2023, Zach Wilson's the poster child, and the failure of a number two pick that didn't live up to expectations. Now, was Zach given a difficult hand? Yes. Did he go out there and play well? No. Did some of the criticism he bring onto himself with maybe some of the comments he made along the way? Yeah, absolutely. But it wasn't exactly the easiest of situations. Last year, nothing went the way that it was supposed to. And yeah, I do agree that when Woody Johnson says, and everybody, Joe Douglas, whoever it was, that last year was supposed to be a redshirt season for him. Okay, great. But he was forced into the role of playing, and he just didn't respond. And in the NFL, it's a bottom line business. You either produce, or they're going to go find somebody else who can. And he didn't get it done. And I don't know. Look, Rick, I don't know if he goes someplace else and has that change of scenery. I don't know if he's ever going to grow into somebody who was taken second overall and live up to those expectations. I have no idea.
Right, but I think that, I forget who said this, it might have been Ryan Clark who says this. He says, I think it was Ryan Clark who said this. Ryan Clark, I think, was undrafted, correct? I'm pretty sure Ryan Clark was undrafted. Whatever it was.
Was drafted.
Okay, wherever he was drafted, undrafted, late round pick, whatever it was. His
mindset, he's undrafted. Okay, so I stand corrected. Good job.
All right, so his mindset always was, I have to prove to people I can play.
Mm-hmm.
When you get drafted that high in the draft, first, second, third, overall, or you're a first-round pick, you have to prove to people that you can't play. Like, those guys, because of where they were drafted, because of all this potential that people think that they do have, the skill set and everything else, people will always think, I can fix them. So Zach Wilson at some point is going to get another opportunity, I think, just because he's so talented. there'll be some, you know, offensive, you know, Sean McVay type that says, you know, with that skill set, I can, you know, I can fix him. He can learn with me. Problem with the whole Zach Wilson thing is, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, how hard that transition is, right? And you had Mike LaFleur, who was walking out the building, say, yeah, we probably rushed him. In hindsight, he wasn't ready. So that could be one of the things that you point to, because dude, I'm a firm believer in this, just having gone through a, you know, similar situation myself, how important it is when you're that young, that impressionable, don't know what you don't know, probably, you know, mentally not really ready for that jump, like the situation that you put into, the veterans that you have around you, the help you have around you.
Right.
And he would have benefited. Yeah, right. Like last year, if that was his first year, we might have a different conversation right now if he actually had a veteran in front of him. And it's not just on the field stuff. It's how you study. It's how you interact with teammates. Because that was one of the things that I don't think he did a really good job of doing, was creating those relationships with his teammates. Like everyone used to say, like I would ask questions to people I know, like, is Zach a bad guy? They're like, no, he's a good guy. He's just not one of the guys. Right? Like Mike White was one of the guys. And that's why you saw them with the t-shirts on. They wanted to play for him. And that's not something that's something that sometimes you have to learn. Like, how do I become one of the guys? Because at that quarterback position, it's a natural position of leadership. And it's also when you're the second overall pick, like you're treated a little bit different. And you got to make sure you go out of your way to make the guys feel like, hey, I'm just one of the guys. And I got to earn my stripes. And, you know, hopefully, you know, if he does get an opportunity, he's realized that, he's learned that, and he'll find a way to make it work. But it's not going to be with the Jets.
So what you're saying is that Zach could have benefited from having an Alexa Yashin type in the locker room.
No, I benefited from having a Steve Webb. Steve Webb took me into, I lived with Steve Webb my first year.
So Yashin, bad guy.
No, Yashin, good guy. But there are certain veterans, you know this, you wagon, that there are certain guys that just are, they for whatever reason, because a veteran took them under their wing, whatever it is, they're really good with young guys.
All right, to your point, and I was going to bring this up, and he kind of beat me to the punch. 2 years ago, when everything started to blow up a little bit for Zach, right? We had that game up in New England where offense didn't do anything, and he made the comments after the game, which seemed to, you know, have stayed with him since, about, do you take any responsibility for the offense's shortcomings? He said no. And then he kind of like lost the room, and then it became Mike White, Mike White, Mike White. I said this last year when he was thrust into playing after Aaron went down, and I said, let me just preface this by saying, I don't know if this is going to make any damn difference on the field. I don't know if the results are going to be any different. But all I can tell you is, as somebody who's in that room pretty consistently, who has relationships with a lot of people in that room, right? I saw with my own eyes, and speaking to Zach at least, this was a different guy in the locker room in 2023 versus 2022. Now, unfortunately, it didn't yield any returns on the field, and that's all the team cares about. That's all the fan base should care about. But there was a little bit of that maturation and growth away from the football field. But the Jets still need to find somebody who can go out there and help them win football games. And I don't think that he is that guy. You know, like you just say, the ship has sailed. And this happens all the time in sports. It doesn't matter if a guy is good. You know, he can be a talent. He can be an all-star. He may have done it in his career and proven that he could play. But sometimes the situations are just wrong for players, right?
Yep.
I mean, then again, you just got to get them out of that. It's like, how many pitchers over the years, for example, like did the Yankees have or the Mets have? Or guys that were all-stars previously, they come to New York and they spit the bit, right? Sonny Gray, for example. Sonny Gray couldn't pitch here with the Yankees, but he was an all-star with the Oakland A's before he came here. He goes to Cincinnati. He has a fantastic season. St. Louis signs him to be almost like the ace of their staff now. Just get him out of New York. It's almost a situation like that, except I don't know if Zach is ever going to be able to leave that imprint somewhere in the league. It's just not going to happen with this team.
No, it's absolutely not going to happen with this team. He needs a reset. I mean, the Jets need to, I mean, you just mentioned who the face of kind of the failure has been now, is pivoted from, you know, Adam Gase to now Zach Wilson, another, I mean, the fact that we...
And Rick, maybe that's not fair.
Well, it's not, but you're the quarterback. You're the face of the franchise. You're the second overall pick after we had just failed with the third overall pick, which makes it even worse. That the third overall pick didn't work, we didn't handle that properly, and now we have the second overall pick, and now that doesn't work. And now we're putting all our eggs in a 40-year-old basket, coming off an Achilles.
Right.
That's what pissed me off about last year, though, Dan, is if you're going to commit to a redshirt season... Commit to the redshirt season. If you don't think he was ready because he did not have the ability to sit behind a savant like Aaron Rodgers when his career first started, and you were committed to trying to make this work, then make sure he was going to have a redshirt season. Even if Aaron goes down, we're not comfortable putting him in because he's still not ready. Find someone else to play. That's why it bothered me, and I know you're right, that there weren't a lot of backup quarterbacks banging down the Jets' door to sit behind Aaron Rodgers because they just figured we're never going to get a chance to play. Right? Like, I mean, Gardner Minshew, how come he went to Indianapolis? Well, he has a relationship with Shane Steichen, and on top of that, you know, they got a rookie quarterback. So he's got to feel, you know, he obviously feels like he's got a better chance to win. Guy's an athletic guy, and it turns out he was right. So why am I going to go sit behind Aaron Rodgers?
Right.
So you're right, but still, like, once he went down, I would have liked to seen them pivot and make sure that Zach didn't see the field, but he did prove to everyone that, you know, it wasn't going to work, that it wasn't going to get fixed here. And now, you know, hopefully at the end of this, they find a trade partner, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen either.
All right. Want to hear from Jet fans at 800-919-3776. Your reaction to the Woody Johnson comments that if we can't trade him, we're not going to release him. Did you ever allow yourself to entertain the possibility that Zach Wilson would still be on this roster once next football season rolls around? Speaking of that last year, Rick, where it was supposed to be that redshirt season, yep. Here was Woody talking about that yesterday.
You know, Zach, you know, I feel badly about Zach in some ways because, you know, last year would have been a first time he could just sit back and watch a master at work. And he's never had that. He's been in the fire from day one. And I think that's what he needs. He needs to be in a place where he can observe for a while. He's got the skill. He can do everything. There's a reason we drafted him at number two overall. I have confidence that he'll get there at some point.
I'm surprised they haven't been able to work something out to where, and this might have to happen, like the Jets might have to attach a draft pick to Zach Wilson to be able to trade him someplace to then get a conditional pick in return. But the Jets don't have a lot of draft capital to begin with for this year. I know they got the few compensatory ones, 6th and 7th round, but, you know, is that really going to do a hell of a lot to entice a team to take Zach Wilson off your shoulders? I don't know.
No, I think there's a lot of teams, or whatever the teams that are interested in potentially bringing Zach in, are like, they're going to have to release him. No one's gonna bend over backwards to try to get this a deal done for Zach Wilson.
I really think you might be looking at a scenario, like I outlined before, that it might have to warrant another, ironically enough, right? Ironically, in a year like last season, where he only got put into the, into the fire again because Aaron Rodgers goes down, it might take another quarterback somewhere else around the National Football League getting hurt to be able to solve the Zach Wilson Jets enigma and get him off of this team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the interesting thing I thought when, you know, the timing of when the Bears decided to trade Justin Fields. I know they're trying to do right by him and he's in a good spot, but like, I mean, you waited this long. The market wasn't what you thought. Wouldn't it have been better to wait when, like, inevitably one of these quarterbacks was going to get hurt? I mean, how many quarterbacks got hurt? Last year was the year of the backup quarterback, you know, but they made that decision. I don't know, man. It's just, I mean, what he said, though, I think is one of the most important things is, and what happens to a lot of young players, when you struggle early, especially at this position, being the face of the franchise, second overall pick, like there's always this, whenever you're drafted that high, you're supposed to be the savior of the franchise, right? Like he's going to save us. And when it doesn't work early and you struggle early, it's tough to come out of that because you're constantly in the fire. So once you go down that road where you start questioning, you know, can I do this? And with the whole, and I think one of the things he got himself into trouble with is that, you know, he was trying to beat into his head, make the simple play, make the simple play, make the easy play, don't make the mistake. When that's how you're being coached and you're trying to consistently avoid mistakes, you end up making mistakes. You can't play like that.
Right.
You can't play timid. You can't play slow. It starts spiraling and you can't get out of it. And the worst part is you can't get out of the fire and there's always the pressure. Where you can't afford to make a mistake, and that is not a place to be and try to have success when you're struggling the way that Zach was struggling.
All right, let me throw some names at you right now. Like in the event some team needs a quarterback,
yep,
hell or high water for whatever reason. Let me give you some of the names that technically are still out on the market, and this would stand as a speed bump to maybe a club having interest in Zach Wilson. Because remember, you still have to deal with a contract too; he's still on the books. Ryan Tannehill's still available.
Yep,
he could win you games. Okay, and I'm sure that Tannehill probably thought that maybe he would find some place, an opportunity to maybe get some playing time. He's probably thinking the same thing we are. Like, somebody's going to get injured, and then that team's going to call me, a la Joe Flacco, and I'm going to come in and possibly have a chance to contribute. Brian Hoyer, Nate Sudfeld, Blaine Gabbert, Carson Wentz, Trevor Siemian, A.J. McCarron, Matt Barkley, Logan Woodside, Felipe Franks, and Garrett Gilbert. So that is what you're looking at right now. And remember, there's going to be guys that are drafted that are going to be on some team's roster, maybe even open the year as the number three, that because of injuries, they might have to play. You're also going to have undrafted quarterbacks that sign somewhere that, who knows, might be able to author a story for themselves. I think that, I'll ask you this question before I even say it. The perception of Zach Wilson around the league, forget about the talent, forget about what made him the number two overall pick. Do you think that the general perception from talent evaluators and clubs around the rest of the NFL is that Zach Wilson is quote-unquote toxic?
No.
I would agree on that. Because I'm just thinking of ways that would stand in the way for a team to take a shot at him.
Well, here's the thing, though. It's not even taking a shot at him. I think that most teams, if not all teams, have the same mindset with him that the Jets were supposed to have last season, where he needs a year off. He needs to learn. And on top of that, I think the reason why he's not viewed as toxic around the NFL is because there's probably not a lot of people that think that the Jets handled his development the right way. And on top of that, raise your hand if you think a vast majority of the NFL feels like Nathaniel Hackett is a good offensive coordinator.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, we can fix him, but there's still a ton of bad habits we got to coach out of him. We got to teach him. I think the other thing that's probably not real attractive about Zach right now is with these guys like McVay and Shanahan, they spend hours and hours and hours game planning, coming up with plays, right? The sequence of plays, how they want it run. And when Zach feels most comfortable playing outside of the system, like that's when he's at his best. It's not like, here's the play, here's the timing, put the ball, you know, where it needs to be, and let's keep this thing moving. It's like he likes when the play breaks down. There's not a lot of offensive gurus that like a quarterback that plays like that. And that's kind of where Zach is right now. So, like, Ryan Tannehill would be the one, hey, I lost my quarterback, I need to win games, this guy can run my offense, here's the plays, run them. He can do that. I don't know if Zach is ready to do that right now.
Well, I know one team, for example, the Denver Broncos, you figure they're going to draft a quarterback here at some point next month. They've got Jared Stidham on their roster right now. So and Sean Payton, somebody with an ego who thinks he could get through to any quarterback, that would seem like an eventual landing spot or a possible landing spot, depending on what they do next month with the draft, like I said. So I would keep my eyes on Denver. We'll take your calls on this when we come back at 800-919-3776. Also get into some of the comments made by the Giant Brass. Brian Daboll's going to talk in the next hour as well. DNR on a Tuesday. It is Dan and Rick, 98.7 ESPN. And now a word from True Green. Are you ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank? True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners for over 50 years. Visit TrueGreen.com today and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn guaranteed. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Looking for more access to the show?
Why? Because you know why.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
By the way, it's time now for the tournament update, which is brought to you by Schweppes. Who doesn't enjoy a good old Schweppes? Caitlin Clark dropped 32-8. Number one seeded Iowa, top number eight West Virginia, 64-54. Paige Beckers scored 32 points to go with 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals to lift number 3 UConn over number 6 Syracuse, 72-64. With the win, UConn extends its NCAA tournament record streak of consecutive Sweet 16 appearances to 30. 30?
It's amazing.
30.
It's amazing.
Good for Gino. He's doing good with that program. I think he's got a future. That was the tournament update presented by Schweppes. Schweppes offers above-the-rim refreshment and is proud to sponsor the Big East Conference. Enjoy the madness and take a break from the hoops action with a Schweppes seltzer or Schweppes ginger ale or ginger alley, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Giants. Let's talk about the Giants. We talked a little bit about them during the CMT portion of the program, Rick. Brian Daboll speaking. RJ, we don't have that audio yet, do we?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Daboll, very secretive. He said, I'll tell you guys the secret, just don't want to share it with the rest of the world. So we'll find out if somebody is going to let the cat out of the bag there. We are both under the assumption, and John Mara kind of spoke about it yesterday as well, along with Joe Shane, that it seems, if you want to read the tea leaves, that they don't have any hesitation about turning in that card with a quarterback's name on it in the first round this year.
No, they don't. But in the same breath, I would say this is, and I said this to you yesterday, Joe Shane also said that there are very few people that actually have any idea what the Giants are thinking right now. And yet every story that we see coming out about the Giants is they love J.J. McCarthy. They're one of the teams that's rumored to be going up to, you know, trying to get up to the third pick to draft the quarterback. So, I mean, is this part of just lying season, part of the whole smokescreen? Like, do they want everyone to think that they're hell-bent on getting a quarterback so they can get Malik Nabers, whoever it ends up being, at six?
This is like right out of the Adam Peters playbook, like with the smokescreens and everything.
Right. Well, this one makes sense, though. This is how they approach the whole Kayvon Thibodeau thing, isn't it?
Right.
So, I mean, if that's true and no one really knows, and yet we see all these reports, like, you're being fed information that they want you to know. So why would you want people to know that? Well, because we want Minnesota to trade up. We want people to go up. We want to make sure four quarterbacks go before us so we have the opportunity to get one of these wide receivers that we like.
Here's the advantage you have if you want to believe the Giants are taking a quarterback. You know it. I know it. He even knows it. Daniel Jones is done with them after this year. He's done. So they're going to need somebody to play the position. They're going to need a future answer at quarterback after 2024 at the earliest. So if you believe in one of these guys, you might as well take him in the first round, because I get it. Let's say you draft a wide receiver or a playmaker. Not only is he going to be here for Daniel Jones's last year, which is fine, but what about next season as well? You know, it still is going to extend. It's still going to be okay. You know, you still have him under contract. But again, do you really want to tie up a wide receiver, for example, for the next X amount of years if you still have a big question mark as to who your quarterback is going to be? I don't think that that's conducive to good team building.
No, I don't think so either. Unless we're not, because we're not privy to these conversations, unless John Mara is hell-bent that Daniel Jones is our guy and we want to give him the opportunity to prove that to everyone.
He's not their guy, and they know that.
Dude, every time you hear John Mara speak, he makes excuses as to why it hasn't worked out.
Yeah, but it still doesn't mean that he's the guy.
No, I don't think he's the guy either. And I would be hard-pressed if I was Brian Daboll or Joe Shane to bet my livelihood on Daniel Jones.
But Woody Johnson was making excuses for Zach Wilson earlier, saying, you know, things didn't really work out for him and all this, I feel bad for him, but it's still, he's clearly not the guy.
Well, yeah, he's not the guy because they have Aaron Rodgers. They don't have, the Giants don't have a quarterback yet.
But the Jets went out and got a guy because they knew that Zach Wilson was not to be the guy.
Right, I understand that. But you're also in a spot, if you're the Giants, where you're at the mercy of whatever happens in front of you. Because, you know, all these people that wanted to pretend like winning games last year was important when it wasn't, oh, good organizations, they'll figure it out. It's all about winning now. Well, now you're stuck at six where three quarterbacks go 1-2-3, and Minnesota may just have more to give up than you want to give up to get up ahead of you to take the fourth one. So then what do you do?
All right, so you're telling me the four quarterbacks are off the board and you stood pat at six.
Well, yeah, because you couldn't get up, or the deal that Minnesota Vikings wanted to make with Arizona was more favorable than your deal.
I brought it up yesterday, and I don't know. I'm not 1,000% confident that it's going to happen, but what if the Giants trade down a couple of spots and then they're the ones that end up with Brock Bowers?
No, but that still doesn't solve the problem, though.
It doesn't solve the problem, but again, it gets you. What if they are in love with this guy? Remember, once upon a time, the Jets had a tight end already, and they still took Kyle Brady in the first round, in the top 10, no less. You know, if you have a guy who is that highly graded and Brock Bowers is probably the highest rated tight end prospect to come in the draft in a good number of years, everybody says. But then there is that danger. Like, I wouldn't do it. Me personally, I would not do it. You don't think the Falcons want a mulligan right now on the Kyle Pitts thing from a couple of seasons ago?
Probably, but I think we'll get a better opportunity to see what that looks like with an actual quarterback.
Yeah, but still. You know, that forced them to have to go out there and spend all that money to sign a Kirk Cousins, for example.
Right. Well, there's been plenty of those, though, too.
They also drafted a running back in the first round, too. Think about that. The Falcons, 2 years in a row, a tight end and a running back in the first round. Wow.
And a wide receiver, yeah.
Wow.
Well, they thought that they would have the three playmakers, and then they would hope that the quarterback would work out. But Desmond Ridder is clearly not the guy. So now they pay Kirk Cousins a boatload of money. But you're still not solving the problem here, though. Right? You just told me last hour, or whenever we were talking about this, that drafting a young quarterback buys Joe Shane and Brian Daboll more time. Drafting a tight end doesn't. So what do they do? How do they address the position? Is it Drew Lock?
No, but no, they have Daniel Jones for at least another year.
No, I'm saying, but you're not drafting if you draft Brock Bowers by moving down and you draft him, what are you doing at quarterback?
What if there is a possibility, because we've also spoken about this, that they are already so gung-ho on the quarterback crop for 25? Look, and not just, by the way, I've heard this thrown out there in league circles, that some people feel that this group, just because there's a lot of them, it doesn't mean that it's quality. It's like more quantity over quality. It doesn't mean that these quarterbacks are all going to be good, that there are some people who think that the quarterbacks next year might even be better. And there may not be as many of them that are taking the first round, but at least like the top of the heap, better than what you're getting top of the group this year. So maybe the Giants are a part of that camp, and they say, hey, we'll just turn in the card next year with the quarterback because we like those guys better. See if we can piece together this season, win some games, much like they did a couple of years ago by shocking everybody making the playoffs.
Okay, but I mean, I would have to have already had a conversation with ownership knowing that I'm going to be here next year. Like, if this season doesn't go well, Daniel Jones doesn't play well, we win five games, will I still be here next year to make that pick? But can you guarantee me that? Because if you can't, then it's in my big, it's better for me to draft the quarterback now to at least have the, you know, sell fan, the fans the hope that we have our, you know, our future quarterback for next season or whenever he happens to play this season.
Here is our buddy Mel Kiper Jr. on the first draft pod talking about the Giants and the decision at quarterback.
You're putting Daniel Jones in a rough spot going into this year without a go-to receiver. They haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver, Daniel, since 2018, right? At 6 years, they haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver. Giants last since Daniel Jones came into the league in explosive pass plays. They don't have that Malik Nabers, who's the most explosive receiver in this draft. You don't look at a Romo Dunze, steady, reliable, consistent. That's assuming Marvin Harrison Jr., who's outstanding, is gone. So you're going to pass on two elite receivers that you desperately need and have not had to take a guy who could be the heir apparent or challenge Daniel Jones.
I would have to know I was going to be around to make that pick next season. But again, you may be at the mercy of... Listen, I know and Dave is hell-bent on getting a quarterback. Doesn't want to reach for one, but is hell-bent on getting a quarterback because he doesn't believe in Daniel Jones.
I don't think any Giant fan does.
Right, but the more you read... Just going back again to what I said earlier, the way that Joe Shane conducts himself around this time of the year and how he did it with Kayvon Thibodeau, when no one, like, the reports were they didn't even like Kayvon Thibodeau, right? The meeting didn't go well. They end up drafting him with a fifth overall pick. What would make the most sense is that this is all a smokescreen, that they're not all in to get a quarterback. They want everyone to believe they're all in to get a quarterback, so they have the opportunity here at six now where four quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4 to get a better player at six or the player they want at six.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, they make a change. Because like you said, there's no guarantees and there's no assurances yet. If the Giants go ahead and bring in a new coach, let's start with the coach for 2025. That would be, Rick, the fourth different head coach this team has had in 7 years. How is that conducive to stability and to building a winner and to having consistency? Because you know what? They're going to look at the Giants from the outside as an organization that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. Because if you keep changing coaches every couple of years, you become like the Cleveland Browns were back in the day, and you're a laughingstock. And I think John Mara knows that because, you know what, John Mara probably knows that they've had way too many head coaches themselves before even possibly making another change. They've already had three different guys in the last 6 years.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but listen to what you're saying, though. So if they don't, now what are you doing? Because you already saw how it worked out with Daniel Jones. New coaches, new offensive systems. It's not conducive to developing a young quarterback. So if they don't draft the quarterback this year, they have a bad season. They draft the quarterback next season, right? They draft the quarterback in next year's draft. That means that you're pretty much signing on to Brian Daboll and Joe Shane for at least the next 2-3 years if you want to develop the quarterback the right way. right? Like, because you're not going to all of a sudden draft the quarterback, let them draft the quarterback, have another bad season, be like, okay, now we're going to get a new head coach because that's going to be good for the young quarterback.
Well, think about the Jets, for example, right? The Jets, when they took Sam Darnold in 2018, that was already Bowles' fourth year, and they were rebuilding, clearly rebuilding. Still took the quarterback, fired Bowles after 1 year with Darnold, and then they brought in Adam Gase.
Right, and then fired Mike Maccagnan after he went through the entire draft and free agency.
Correct.
Right.
And that's not exactly the way that you want to go about building a franchise, because we know that it did not work out. I just think you have to have at least some consistency. You know, you hired people for a reason. You hired guys that once upon a time, and we're only talking about 2 years ago, Rick, they made the playoffs. They showed that, you know what, they actually have an idea of what's going on. Last year, you knew it would be challenging. Schedule was a little bit more difficult. They had that murderer's row right out of the gate. They had injuries to start the season. And then the season was essentially over by the time you got to mid-October. Isn't this just a one-off? We see this from teams all the time.
Well, you hope so.
Right, that they maybe play a little bit above their heads that first season under new regime, and then they come back to the pack, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be a spectacular failure for the rest of the time that those guys are there.
No, I don't believe that's true either, but we're also not inside that locker room, right? Like, we weren't a part of all the dysfunction that was happening with the New York Giants last year, with Wink and Dable. I mean, Kafka wanted to leave. Like, going back, I mean, some of the reports coming out now, I don't know how much of it's true and how much of it isn't, but... You know, like, not telling Mike Kafka, you know, that I'm taking the play calling away from you, then taking it away from him, giving it to the quarterback's coach, then back to Kafka, then he's taking it over. Like, so if they have a bad season, don't draft the quarterback, have a bad season, and you're hearing the same stuff come out of the locker room that no one wants to work with Brian Dable. You're going to keep rolling with Brian Dable?
But you know what, Rick? Did that team fall apart late in the season, or did they actually play hard?
No, they played hard.
They played hard.
Yeah, which
they
is didn't fine, fold. But okay, and you won meaningless games that now has you at six.
But remember, you had the Tommy DeVito infusion. Okay, you won three in a row. Then they even lost games. Like that Rams game, what was that, on New Year's Eve? They could have easily won that game. Except right. Mason Crosby didn't have the leg for it.
They could have beat the Jets, too.
Could have easily beaten the Jets. So my point is that this team did not quit on Brian Dable. And I think that's important. In a year that was clearly going nowhere, this team did not fold. So it's not like he lost the room, which I think is important whenever you're making an evaluation. Should we keep a guy on the job, even if you're not winning games?
No, but you're missing the point. I agree with you. I think Brian Dable is a good coach. But you had the one playoff win, and you overachieved, which kind of fast-forwarded this process. Bad season, all things, I mean, between Andrew Thomas getting hurt, Saquon got hurt, Daniel Jones, okay, like all those things, there's plenty of reasons as to why the season didn't go well. And you're right, the team fought, which is great. But if you have another bad season, and then you draft a young quarterback, and you have another bad season, that's three straight bad seasons. Do they give him a fourth? And if you're drafting a quarterback, you've already seen it happen. It happens all the time. You can't draft the quarterback and then fire the coach that following year and have the kid, new head coach, new offensive system. So what I'm saying is, if you make that commitment to Brian Dable, they don't draft the quarterback, and next year they do, you're going to have to keep him for another 2 years at least.
I don't know about that. I think you can maybe give him 1 year then with a rookie quarterback.
No, that would be a terrible idea.
Well, what if this
that
season though,
the
goes,
whole point?
What if this season, what if they're 4-13 this year?
Yeah, do they let him make a pick? That's what I'm saying. So yeah, like you want continuity for continuity's sake, you let him make the pick and then he stink again.
Well, Joe Shane's going to be making the pick. So the question is then, would you be prepared if you're the Giants then to get rid of the head, make Dable the sacrificial lamb and keep Joe Shane and allow him to hire another coach?
Well, that would be a question for the owner.
Or do you clean house?
I'm just saying, if they have another bad season and you hear all the same rumblings coming out of the locker room that Brian Dable's a pain in the ass to work with and no one wants to work with him, like, I don't know, do you start asking questions?
Yeah, but you played for coaches. Like, why does a coach have to be buddy-buddy with all the players? Like,
no, sometimes I'm not saying the players. I'm saying the coaches.
Oh, well, you know what? Here's a thing, okay? And I get it. There was a lot of headlines and everything that kind of fell out with that. But no other team gobbled up Wink Martindale. Right? He's now coaching in college. And by the way, he's doing pretty good for himself. He's the highest paid assistant coach in college football. He's the DC down in Michigan.
Yes.
But no other team wanted him. So it's not like the Giants wronged Wink Martindale. Then why did another team like stop what they were doing and bring him in?
Okay. Yes, you're correct. And I agree with you. You can explain this away as, you know, Wink Martindale is also not easy to work for. Felt like he was the defensive guy. He had his whole coaching staff. They would do their thing. Brian Dable would do his offensive thing. Leave me alone. And no one jumped. So you can explain it away as, okay, we can put some of the blame, if not, you know, a lot of the blame on Wink. But I'm saying if it happens again.
If it happens again, then Wink, you got something.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So if they have a bad season, same stuff comes out of the locker room. No one wants to work for Brian Daboll. He's a pain in the ass. I mean, and they have another bad season. I don't know. It just, there was a lot of noise this season. And that was coming off a playoff win. There was a lot of noise as to whether or not he was going to, was a good coach. They followed up with another bad season. There's no way you can draft the quarterback and then fire the coach after one season with a new quarterback. You can't do that to the kid.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere.
Dave. I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to have Jordan Renan on in a minute to talk a little Giant football. He's down at the owners' meetings. We promised you Brian Daboll. Here was the coach on whether or not he will be calling plays this season.
Something that I'm looking into, talked to, I think there's 20 head coaches at this point in time that call plays in the league, which is on both. So I think it's 20. There might be a little bit more, but again, I've been doing a bunch of research, but no decision's been made. I'm still going through that process and thinking about what we need to do.
Okay, so that's the coach on play calling. Now, how about the divorce from Wink Martindale?
Every year is a different year, new changes. Excited to have Shane. I think Shane's done a great job since he's been here. The coaches that we've had on staff, those guys have really meshed well together. And I know they're excited for a couple weeks to get the players back.
Do you regret how that situation played out?
Yeah, look, every year, every season's different. Every situation's different. Looking forward to this season.
All right, so without further ado, let's get a little bit more clarity on all issues New York Giants. And we bring on our good pal. He covers them for us here at ESPN. It is the great Jordan Renan. Jordan, good morning. How's things?
Was this table done talking yet?
No. Huh? See, he's
sorry,
Jordan's
wait,
used to it. That's why, because he lives in the Brian Daboll world. How are things?
Yeah. Everything's good, you know. We're in Florida. We're, you know, a lot of NFL business going on around here. And you just heard Brian Daboll talk. That's the one thing you take away from that, number one, is when he says the play calling is something I'm looking into, and then he starts ripping off numbers of head coaches who are play callers.
Play calling research.
Brian Daboll's going to call the plays, right? I mean, we could all agree that's what that means.
But doesn't he have to, though, Jordan? And Jordan, make sure you put some sunscreen on that schnozola down in Florida.
See, there you go. So, by the way, Rick, now, so you already took your shot. It took, like, you know, 2 seconds of talking for you to do it. I make one little text comment to you yesterday saying you had a weak point, and you get all soft and you say I'm being mean to you.
It was
on
nasty.
There. Like what? So wait, you just made a remark about me in 5 seconds, and you're going to take offense to a remark I made saying your nugget was weak?
No.
Come on, you got to be tougher than that. If you're going to dish it, Rick, you got to be tougher. You got to be able to take it.
Jordan, what was the weak comment that he made?
He said he had this, what was it, a nugget, right? A J.J. McCarthy nugget.
What was the J.J. McCarthy
nugget? It was some guy on Twitter who's basically a fraud. I mean, let's be fair.
Jordan thinks he's better than this guy. That's where this all stems from. Jordan thinks he's better than this guy.
I don't even know who the guy is, to be honest with you.
Okay, this is what happened. This is what happened, Daniel, is that Dave was getting a little long-winded. He was getting a little boring, so I figured I had to spice up the show a little bit. So I had the J.J. McCarthy nugget I came across that he plays like in the confines of the offense, which offensive geniuses like because
they like
calling the plays. And then Jordan, boom, instantly. I say it. Yeah, right. And he starts the call snoring with that schnoz. And what is he expecting to do? Not take a shot?
Interesting.
Right. Jordan, let's be professionals
now. You teased it like a real professional, and I was intrigued, and then I felt let down. I was like, I thought it was going to be something better than that.
All right, planet sinker.
Let me ask you this. We're about a month away from the draft. Right now, before we have any trades or anything, the way the wind is blowing, in your opinion, what position are the Giants drafting in the first round?
I think they would like to draft a quarterback, but I don't know if that's really an option. It's becoming more and more difficult to see that being an option because the top three teams at the top either A, want a quarterback, or if they trade out, they're going to want a huge ransom for their pick. And then you have the Vikings kind of lingering of, you know, that to possibly move up to number four or jump the Giants. And the Giants don't have a lot of draft capital. So I'm going to say wide receiver, Dan, because I think the top four picks are going to end up being quarterbacks here. And I don't think the Giants are in position. They don't have enough draft capital. They only have 6 picks. There's only 2 teams with fewer draft picks than the Giants this year. They're a team that's in need of a rebuild. So to use a lot of draft capital to even move up and get a quarterback, I don't know if I see that happening at this point, even though I think they would probably prefer to draft one of the quarterbacks. But I don't know if one of them is going to be there for them at 6.
Jordan, how much stock are you taking in the idea that, I mean, I was talking about this with Dave, and I'm sure you were listening because you love the show. Just with the, I mean, we would have you on.
Of course.
And we would ask you questions the year they drafted, you know, Thibodeau and Evan Neal. And I think we asked you a couple different times what, you know, what you were hearing. And I guess there was a thought, you know, that they didn't really like Kayvon Thibodeau. Or I guess, I mean, there were some, yeah. And then all of a sudden they draft him with a 5th overall pick. And I actually read something that Joe Shane's like, listen, there are very few people that have any idea what the hell we're doing. And yet we see all these rumors about they love J.J. McCarthy. They're one of the teams that wants to trade up. I mean, do you buy into it all that this is, I mean, this is Joe Shane kind of being a little bit diabolical and making people believe that they want a quarterback so he can get one of those receivers, Neighbors, or potentially even Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Nah, you're giving them too much credit. These kind of things just take care of themselves. Like, I think if you go look hard enough, there's the Giants like J.J. McCarthy, the Giants like Drake May, the Giants like Jaden Daniels. It's all out there. It's just part of like the draft ecosystem that's out there. I mean, I don't know if you heard yesterday, but like, you know, Tom Pelissero from NFL Washington, Network dropped that. Washington with J.J. McCarthy. So like these things just take care of itself. Like you almost don't even need to do that. I don't think people are really that diabolical. Think about this. If Joe Shane called me and said, you know, we really like J.J. McCarthy, I would immediately be like, okay, what? Like, I wouldn't even take that seriously. I would immediately would raise a red flag if he did that, right? No general manager's going and coming up to you and telling you who they like. That's just not how this works.
Jordan Renan joining us here on DNR, talking a little Giant football. Rick and I have been talking about this a lot this morning, actually. And, you know, that's the whole theory that maybe, just maybe, the head coach, maybe even the general manager, could be on a short leash for this upcoming season if it goes spectacularly the wrong way. That being said,
right,
you draft a quarterback, maybe that buys you some time, right? You say, we're going to draft this guy. I need at least a couple of years to develop him to see if we got the goods or not. Do you think Dable, Shane, are looking at this draft of maybe they're having to draft for their jobs in the short term? Obviously, you got to win to keep your job, but do you think that some of the thought process behind the pick would be for job security?
I think in the back of your mind it has to be, but you know, John Mara, and he said it yesterday, he kind of sort of provides them assurances, you know, we're behind you. And I think most coaches and even general managers that have worked in this organization, they come away with the feeling that they're safe, right? It doesn't necessarily mean they're safe. The reality is, I always say, coaches and GMs get fired when the fan base is sort of fed up with them to the point where it's bad for business for ownership. But ownership is telling them, you know, you're fine, we support you. So I don't think they feel that urgency, but I do think in the back of their mind they do realize it. I don't think that's something that's going to force them to make a move, to be honest with you, because I think they feel comfortable where they are right now, that they're going to get time to turn this around and rebuild it and get this organization right finally, because they know, and John Mara mentions this and he's said this many times, like he feels like at times in the past he didn't give people enough time and he was too short. Specifically, he said that many times about Ben McAdoo, how they basically fired him less than a year after making the playoffs, you know, in the second year. So I think that it's not going to guide their decision.
The very handsome, very talented Jordan Renan, who I love to death.
Dude, that's better.
I love him to death. Jordan, so I think we're all in agreement that Daniel Jones back starts week one. But what do you think? What's the sense you get as far as the plan for the season goes with Daniel Jones? Because I know there's the injury guarantee that kicks in if he does end up getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's going to hang out there. I think that'll play into the equation if things go poorly and they're not winning and, you know, as we sort of move forward in the season. But like you said, I mean, and that's why I think I told you a few weeks back, you know, when it was kind of coming out, the Giants are done with Daniel Jones. They're not done with Daniel Jones. He's going to start in the, you know, the literal sense of the term done with Daniel Jones. So the likelihood is he's going to start week one. There are talk already about him getting into drills at points in the spring. But if things go bad and things start going poorly throughout the season and they're not winning a ton of games, which, you know, distinct possibility of happening. This team isn't exactly loaded roster-wise. You have to think that, okay, at that point, either if there's a rookie out there that they have, they'll either start playing or they have to start protecting their investment in regards to that injury guarantee that you're talking about. That's when I think maybe it'll come into play. But at the beginning of the season, like this organization does say what you want about John Mara. He spends a lot of money, and they do anything they can in order to win. They even mentioned that about Saquon. I was like, why didn't you trade Saquon Barkley? You know, I asked John Mara, and I asked Joe Shane, and because, you know, they value the trying to win games in the season, even when we all look at it like, well, the season was over. What are you doing? They don't view it that way. Like, winning games matters to them. Like, it matters to John Mara. It matters to Joe Shane and people that are invested in it, and that's their job. So they're not just going to be like, well, you know what? Let's worry about the injury guarantee with Daniel Jones, even though we're 2-2. Like, they're not going to do that at that point in the season, or at least until, you know, it's really over and way later in the season or something like that.
Last one for me, Jordan. Did Brian Daboll answer any questions about the future of Darren Waller? And what have you heard on that regard? Is he retiring? Is he playing? Where do things stand?
Yeah, nobody knows the answer to that. I don't think there is an answer. So you get a lot of uncertainty. They're going to give him this time. They're waiting. Joe Shane did say the one thing that I did take away from that is, you know, hey, we did sign two tight ends. We still might add one in the draft. So they're obviously making contingency plans in case he doesn't play. But I don't think anyone really knows. I mean, Drew Rosenhaus, who's his agent, is walking around here in Orlando, and like same thing. You know, nobody knows because they're waiting for his answer. And until, you know, he comes to a decision, they're just going to kind of be in limbo, but prepare, I guess. You almost have to prepare as if he's not going to play, right? And then, Rick, you know this as a player. Once you start thinking about retiring, aren't you really already retired? So it's over at that point because you're not training to the same level or putting yourself 100% committed like you were in the past. So at that point, you're already compromising yourself.
Right. That's usually what ends up retiring you. It's not like you'll play the games, but it's just getting yourself ready to play the games and going through an off season and then all the preparation that ends up just being too much. Jordan, I'll get in trouble if I ask you two questions, so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. what are the Giants' thoughts long-term maybe with someone like Drew Lock? Do they feel like there's potential with him that, you know, Brian Daboll could unlock? And if they don't draft a quarterback, that could be the answer. And because you are the pro, and I'm not going to pay attention to some hack on Twitter, why do people think now all of a sudden, so not all of a sudden, but why is J.J. McCarthy, from what you've heard, kind of soaring up the draft boards right now?
All right, the first part of it, let's do J.J. McCarthy first, okay? I don't think, when you say, it's all relative, when you say fly up the draft boards, maybe people in the NFL already thought he was a really good prospect beforehand.
Yep.
Right, because he has all the tangible skills that you kind of need to be successful at that position. So I think it's just because of the way he was used at Michigan, I don't think people on the outside viewed him as the same kind of prospect. But imagine he was given the same hype as Drake May, right, going into the season. I don't think people would be so outraged. Oh, it's a reach to take him. Why? Did Drake May play lights out this season? No, J.J. McCarthy played pretty good, really good in what they asked him to do, and won a national championship on top of that. So I think it's overrated, but he has all the skills, right? He's athletic. He could throw the football well. He has size. He has the mental component that comes with being a great quarterback. So I think all those skills are there, and that's why you see a lot of teams that really like him. What was the other part real quick, Rick?
No, some hack on Twitter.
No, long-term for Drew Lock. Is this just like a, you know, let's see what the kid has, or is there some thought that he's talented enough?
I don't see that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see the Drew Lock being a long-term. He's on a one-year deal worth $5 million. I think they're just looking at it as, here's a guy who hasn't been injured in his career. That was a big deal with signing Drew Lock because that was the thing with bringing back Tyrod Taylor. You have an injury-prone Daniel Jones. Is it really a good idea to have an injury-prone Tyrod Taylor right behind him? Drew Lock is a guy who's shown he's younger, he's healthy, he has some skills that they can work with. But I don't think that's any sort of long-term solution. The long-term solution is either, A, Daniel Jones plays off the charts and plays really well and does what they thought going into last season off 2022, or either draft a quarterback this year or next year and you move forward. Those are the realistic options to me.
And I'm sure the stories are going to change as we get closer to draft time anyways. Jordan, safe travels back home, my friend. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for hopping on.
Anytime, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks for listening to the DPetro and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN New York app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.